Chapter 7.
Derek follows Stiles back into the house, where he heads back into the kitchen and starts loading the dishwasher. I know chores aren't your typical bag, but if you could do the vacuuming while I finish cleaning up the kitchen and doing the last load of laundry, we can get out of here a little quicker, he says to Derek. Derek starts helping him load. Just because it isn't his preferred activity doesn't mean he can't or won't do it.
Sure. Just as soon as you tell me what's got you so turned inside out.
He figures he'll give Stiles a chance before he starts pulling everything McCall said apart. For starters, Stiles slaps a cup into the dishwasher, that we've spent the last 4 hours to give Melissa a nice surprise when she gets home from work, and now she'll be so preoccupied with douchebag Supreme that she won't care.
Okay, that's number one.
He doesn't argue with the probable truth of it.
And number two?
Stiles' voice is clipped and short. I don't want him anywhere near my dad.
Okay. He's an asshole, and we don't want him around. At all. But your dad is a capable, competent person. So I'd give him way more points for being able to handle himself than this guy. So what's the deal?
Stiles sighs. You're not going to let this go, are you? He says.
No, because you're about to snap bones, you're so tense.
He gives Stiles a look that's serious, but almost soft somehow.
You do the same for me.
True, Stiles says. He turns to take the muffins out of the oven, so he won't have to look at Derek. After my mom died, when I was 8, my dad drank a lot. More than he should have.
Okay,
Derek says, more to show that he's listening than to offer an opinion on the subject.
His wife had just died. I'm sure he was upset, obviously.
It seems clear to Derek that anyone would lose their grip for a little while. He would die without Stiles. Literally. Drinking too much doesn't seem that bad in comparison. Yeah, and I was just a kid, you know. I tried to take care of him, and the people down at the station helped out, and Ms. McCall. But that asshole just wouldn't let it go. Every time Scott came over, he was like, I hope you haven't been drinking. Even if it was obvious that my dad was stone sober, or like, I would come over upset about something, usually the state of the cartoons on Nickelodeon, and he would immediately be like, how's your dad doing? Like, Stiles has to swallow hard, his hands gripping down on the edge of the counter. Like it was always his fault that I wasn't okay.
Instead of the fact that you had lost your mother recently, and the damned ice melting in your drink too fast can set you off?
Derek asks, because he knows that feeling all too well. Yeah. Stiles grabs a washcloth and begins to scrub down the counters. So then he started trying to say that Scott couldn't come over.
I'm assuming that this didn't go over very well with anyone.
Derek continues to load the dishwasher around Stiles, letting him have the more mobile and aggressive tasks. To be honest, I'm not entirely sure how it got sorted out, Stiles says, being in that I was only 8 years old. But even after my dad had pulled his shit together and gotten the cap back on the whiskey bottle, Scott's dad just... He just never let it go. He's still not letting it go. Did you hear that little dig about how my dad handles stress? Jesus, it's a miracle I didn't punch him right in his smug mouth.
While that would have been satisfying,
Derek lets that go, because he doesn't need to bother voicing the more obvious consequences.
Try to remember that you're not 8 years old anymore. I don't mean that as in... You should grow up. I mean that he can't bully you like that anymore. Your father's also in a much better place than he used to be. He can handle this jackass. Derek shrugs a little. And if we do have to deal with him, and things get to be too much, let me step in. He doesn't know me. He doesn't know where to hit me, what buttons to press. Yeah. Styles huffs out a sigh. Okay, but if it comes to that, I expect all the gold stars.
I don't know about all of them. Derek teases a little. But I think we can definitely agree on multiple and negotiate from there.
Styles thinks this over. Do I get one for delegating you to the vacuuming?
Are you for real?
Hey, it was worth a try. Sheriff Stilinski isn't the only person in Beacon Hills with less than fond memories of Agent Raphael McCall. Sandy leaves him cooling his heels in the police station lobby for upwards of 5 minutes before even bothering to tell the sheriff that he's there. This puts a smile on Tom's face, but he tells her to show him back because there's probably no point in antagonizing him.
Sheriff, good to see you,
McCall says, extending a hand. Tom shakes his hand in a firm but not overly tight grip.
Feelings mutual,
he replies, with a polite smile. He's not about to lie, and he figures that this is as close to telling McCall how he really feels as possible.
Styles called and told me I'd probably be hearing from you.
Figured he would, McCall says, and sits down in the chair across from the sheriff's desk without waiting to be asked.
He hasn't changed much, has he?
The sheriff busies himself with closing and stacking files away from McCall's prying eyes.
Oh, I don't know. Most people change over time, don't you think? Though not usually their basic personality traits.
He turns his back on the man to file his things away. Then, when he's ready, sits down at his desk.
I'm assuming you need something? What is it?
Well, I'd like to review your files on the murders so far, McCall says. There are a number of people I'm going to need to interview.
Fair enough, Tom says, with a nod. He picks up his phone and dials the desk of one of his deputies.
Deputy Meskey, would you bring in the files on Leahy and...
Yeah, thanks.
He hangs up.
Those will be here in a couple of minutes. Why don't you give me those names and we'll see if we can dispatch some officers to bring them down to the station.
McCall has clearly reviewed some of the case already, because he has a list, which he hands over to the sheriff. They're all reasonable choices, friends or relatives of the deceased.
I'm a bit worried about this Leahy kid, he says casually, as Stilinski skims it.
Oh, why's that? The sheriff asks, figuring that he'll play as nonchalantly oblivious as McCall, if only to annoy him.
Well, he didn't seem real anxious to talk to me earlier,
McCall says. Tom chuckles a little. He can't help it.
Gee, really? How is it that you became his emergency contact?
McCall asks. I saw that the school changed that almost 2 years ago, so it can't have anything to do with his father's death.
No, it didn't.
Tom doesn't want to share Isaac's private business with a jerk, especially an abusive jerk like McCall. But either he will or Isaac will have to himself.
Isaac became friends with Scott and Styles, and not long after that, it came to my attention that his father was abusing him.
He looks McCall squarely in the face when he says it. He refused to press charges or point any fingers despite ample evidence, because his father was his only family and he loves the man. But he did agree to move out. Melissa and I have been looking after him since then. He leans forward. Now, this news is 2 years old, and Isaac has dealt with it admirably. Ask what you need to ask, but do not rake the boy over the coals.
Well, I have no intention of doing so, McCall says. But you do know that most serial killers start with a victim they know, correct?
Sheriff Stilinski rolls his eyes.
Yes, actually. As I said, I can't and won't fault you for wanting to speak to him. But factually so far, this looks like a damned ghost.
Well, McCall smiles his smug little smile. I understand that you don't have the same resources at your disposal as we do over at the Bureau.
We have, however,
had access to the crime scenes.
Tom shrugs, refusing to be baited. But you're welcome to make your own inspections. Who would you like to interview first?
Let's start with the mechanic's girlfriend, McCall says. He's the only one that we really know for sure was a murder in any case.
Tom nods and calls in some officers to run out and pick up the first few people on McCall's list. He thumbs through the file while this is going on. They sit in uncomfortable silence for a few minutes.
So, Scott's looking good, McCall finally says.
Yep,
Tom agrees, in a decidedly noncommittal manner.
There's another drawn-out, awkward pause. How's Melissa doing?
McCall asks. This time, Sheriff Stilinski just shakes his head in a silent refusal to answer the question.
Somewhat stung, McCall says, you know, you should really talk to your son about how he handles authority. He could get in a lot of trouble someday. But today is not that day, because even though you didn't like his attitude, I highly doubt he did anything actually wrong in the eyes of the law.
He does note with disgust that when McCall hadn't gotten his way in talking about Scott or Melissa, he had changed tactics and started taking jabs at Stiles. Still, absolutely the same old asshole.
McCall's jaw tightens. Can't really say I pictured you as the permissive type, he says.
Yeah, well, you never really knew me very well,
Tom replies evenly. Still, McCall says, that's quite a boyfriend Stiles has.
Oh, we're talking about Derek now, Tom says. I thought we were still talking about Stiles' attitude.
Yes, Derek is quite a catch.
How old is he? McCall asks, his tone that of offhand curiosity.
He's 24.
Tom's words are even, but inside he's waiting eagerly to see what sort of response this gains. It's probably going to be the best entertainment he's had all afternoon.
Jeez, McCall says, shaking his head. Can't say that I'd let my son date someone so much older. But hey, he's your kid, I guess.
At this, the sheriff outright laughs.
First off, if you want any say at all in who Scott dates, or how old they are, you'd have to take it up with Melissa and Scott. Secondly, I don't let Stiles date anyone, because he's 18 and therefore a legal adult. Thirdly, there isn't a damn thing about Derek Hale that would make me think he'd be unfit for my son.
Not like he was ever suspected of murder or anything, am I right? McCall says, with that same insincere smile.
Well, he was cleared of all charges, Tom says with a shrug. Those murders were never officially solved, though, correct? McCall asks. Because Peter Hale was the prime suspect, and then he disappeared. And now, well, now people are being murdered again. That seems a little odd, don't you think?
You may notice a distinct lack of connection between the first set of victims and the second. Just a thought I had.
So far, yes, McCall says. But if there is a connection, I'll find it.
Sheriff Stilinski holds up his hands in mute, mock surrender. But internally, he hopes the man doesn't go digging. He doesn't want him finding the connections between the Hales and the Argents, between Stiles and Peter.
Isaac's interview goes about as well as could be expected. Stiles watches through the one-way mirror with his father, while McCall asks all sorts of obnoxious questions about Isaac and how his father treated him. He realizes, halfway through, that he's trembling with rage, but there's nothing he can do to stop it. As much as it makes him furious, McCall has a right to ask. He's obviously expecting that he'll be able to provoke Isaac into some sort of breakdown, but Isaac has never been a fragile flower, even before he had 2 years to learn the self-control that only the full moon taught. He answers every question readily, in a dry, even tone. The lawyer that Keith recommended shows more emotion than he does, occasionally sniping with McCall about whether or not this is necessary. After 20 agonizing minutes,
Isaac gets sick of it. He looks at the lawyer and says, "When should I give him my alibi for the murders? Should I do that now, or let him keep wasting his time?" McCall's lips thin into an irritated expression, but then he says, "Okay, Isaac, where were you the night your father was killed?"
"I slept at Scott's house that night."
Isaac says, "Do you two share a room?"
"Yes, sir,"
Isaac says. "And the night Jim Bennett was killed?"
"I slept at Derek's that night. He was there, so was Stiles. I think a couple other friends were there, too. And I was at school when the mechanic was killed."
"Well, thank you for providing that information," McCall says, and then he goes right back to asking Isaac obnoxious questions as if he hadn't just given alibis. The lawyer puts up with that for about another 5 minutes before he stands up and says, "This interview is over. If you find a flaw in Mr. Leahy's alibi, feel free to call me and we can discuss setting up a second one. Until then, my client has nothing else to say to you." "One more question," McCall says, holding up a finger as if to ask them to wait. "Isaac, how well do you know Derek Hale?"
Isaac says, blinking.
"Pretty well, I guess. I've stayed at his place off and on since I left my dad's. And, you know, he's Stiles' boyfriend, and Stiles and I are like brothers, so..."
"Uh-huh," McCall says.
"And you said you were at his place the night of the second murder? Was he there all night?"
"Yeah,"
Isaac says, now frowning. "Are you certain? Would you swear to it in a court of law?"
"Yes, I'm certain," Isaac says. "Nobody left that night. He has an electronic security system, which I'm sure could verify that for you."
McCall's jaw tightens again. He forces a smile and says, "Thank you for your time, Mr. Leahy. We'll be in touch." Isaac comes out of the interrogation room with a worried look on his face.
"I didn't like that at all," he says, deadpan, which makes Stiles laugh and takes the worst of the tension out of the room.
Isaac casts a glance back at McCall.
"Why is he asking about Derek?"
"Because Derek was already suspected of one murder, so that makes him a good target," Stiles says. "Never mind that he was completely cleared of all charges. Never mind that he's lived quietly for the past several years. He's part of the Stilinski family, so McCall will come at him with both barrels."
"Does he really think he did it?" Isaac asks.
"I doubt it," Stiles says, "but he's got a right to poke around and is probably hoping that he'll find something else to pin on him." He pushes both hands through his hair, tugging on it a little. "I need to just get out of here for a bit. Let's go back to the den. I can settle there."
Isaac hesitates. "Matt was going to..."
"God, fuck Matt!" Stiles exclaims before he can help it. Then he recovers and says, "Shit, sorry, I don't mean to blow up at you. I just text him and ask if we can do it an hour later. I've just got to get a little time to unwind first."
"Okay," Isaac says, nodding a little.
Stiles supposes that the afternoon with Matt won't be as bad as it could be. Matt's picked up on the fact that there's something weird about them, so they won't have to stress too much about acting normal. They won't be able to shift or anything, but at least they won't have to worry about toning down their natural instincts. A good hard run out on the preserve has the worst of it out of his system. They make a quick stop for some groceries, and then meet back at the McCall house. After some thought, Stiles had decided to do things there. She has a bigger backyard, and he won't have to worry about grandparents. About half the pack is already there when he gets there. He spreads out the food and makes sure that everyone, mostly Erica, is dressed appropriately. "Okay, guys, here are the rules," Stiles says, once everyone is there. They still have about 10 minutes before Matt is due to show up. Matt's obviously onto the whole weird things happen in Beacon Hills deal, but let's keep him as in the dark as possible. So if you want to sniff your food or cuddle your packmate, fine, but nothing blatant. Secondly, just try to keep it low-key and natural. Third and lastly, this is not an official pack dinner, so try not to scare the hell out of him. An official pack dinner is how you vet new pack members, right? Mac asks.
Yeah, when lizards aren't involved,
Stiles says, and Danny gives a theatrical shudder.
But seriously, yes, that's the typical protocol. Matt seems like a nice enough guy. He's aware of the supernatural, so under normal circumstances, I might actually consider it, but the pack is pretty big now. At the beginning, we basically had the leeway to choose anyone we wanted, but if the pack keeps growing like this, I won't be able to manage it on my own. I think a dozen is about as many as I can handle. So we're gonna have to get a little more selective.
Jake shifts uncomfortably.
Well, I...
Don't even start, Jake.
Spot number 11 is reserved for you, and that's the last I want to hear about it, Stiles says.
Jake wrinkles his nose, but doesn't protest. Matt arrives a few moments later. It's a little awkward at first, but he's obviously an experienced photographer, and dealing with him is pretty easy, especially when he says, "Pretend I'm not even here." Being able to do that cuts down on the awkwardness a lot, since they don't have to try to include him or even really talk to him. Although, occasionally some of them do. So they play frisbee and toss a lacrosse ball around, and the less athletic pack members act as cheerleaders. They mill around the food or talk about school or just generally fool around.
Oh, how'd it go with that FBI guy today?
Erica asks Isaac.
He's a jerk, Isaac says, but he's a jerk that's got nothing, so that's okay by me.
God, he's going to be such a pain in the ass, Stiles groans.
I still can't believe you're related to that guy, Isaac says to Scott, who rolls his eyes dramatically and agrees.
And by the way, you can probably expect a phone call or a visit from him to verify my alibi.
Alibi for what? Matt asks, and several people startle. He'd been in the background for so long that they had almost forgotten he was there.
Typically, when anyone outside the pack or their immediate families is present, they have to be on guard, and it's impossible to forget about it.
It turns out that my dad's death wasn't an accident, Isaac says.
Matt's eyes go a little wide.
That's awful, man. Do they have any idea who did it?
Not really, just that it might be connected to a couple other murders that looked like accidents at first, Isaac says.
We really shouldn't say much about it, Stiles says. Open investigations and such.
Oh, right, Matt says. Sorry.
It's cool, Stiles says. How's all the yearbook stuff coming?
Good, he says. We're mostly just doing layout now, leaving a few pages for prom and stuff, but the rest of it we have to get put together now.
Lydia, of course, takes this opportunity to talk about the prom. Specifically, she's seen a gorgeous dress and wants to poll everyone for what color goes best with her complexion. Then she tells the other girls that she's already arranged the appointments at the salon, but they really should have a practice run or two so the stylist can decide what would work best with their hair.
Allison and Erica are used to this, but Mac is looking at Lydia like she just got off the plane from Fantasyland.
So do you guys have dates yet? Matt asks the others. I mean, Stiles, how many guys have challenged you for the right to take Erica?
Erica laughs.
I've been asked like 19 times, but Stiles wins.
Why is that? Matt asks.
Because he never complains about going down on me, Erica says brightly.
Oh my God, Erica, Stiles says, flushing pink, but laughing anyway. He clears his throat and says,
just for that?
Nope. Don't even think about it, Erica says.
Stiles makes a face at her. Lydia intervenes to say that Jackson has asked her to go, just as friends. And she supposes that she'll go along with it, if only because they're going to be prom king and queen.
Scott and Allison are going together, of course, but none of the rest of them have dates. Stiles feels a little bad about that, but romance outside the pack is pretty much impossible. There are just too many secrets.
Someday, he thinks, Lydia is going to meet some dorky astrophysicist who doesn't realize what a hot body he has, and they're going to fall madly in love. Someday, Isaac will bump into some shy girl in the gardening section of Home Depot and get lost in her eyes.
Someday Boyd's quiet, patient nature and amazing biceps will attract more women than he can shake a stick at. There are some days for all of them. And then, he supposes, the pack will get even bigger. They'll have families and have to buy even more land. Or maybe someday they'll get in a fight with another alpha and someone will kill them, and then they'll break up into two separate packs. Anything can happen. But despite the world-ending calamities that seem to strike whenever he's not looking, he thinks their future is pretty bright. Matt doesn't question the fact that none of them really have dates, which doesn't surprise Stiles. They're insular, and everyone knows it. Scott asks him if he's taking anybody, and he says no, but his gaze darts over to Allison before he can quite help it. Scott doesn't seem to care, which doesn't surprise Stiles. Few people are as secure in their relationships as Scott and Allison are. The sun starts to set, and Matt says he has to go. He says he'll send Stiles the best pictures for him to approve, and Stiles says okay. Afterwards, Stiles is due at home for dinner with his grandparents, and the others are breaking off into twos and threes. Stiles catches Isaac by the elbow and says, "You're gonna be okay?" "Yeah," Isaac says. "I think I'm all right. It was interesting having Matt here. I mean, he's a nice guy, but he's not..." "Right," Stiles says, and Isaac nods. "Well, we can't all be perfect."